Welcome to a special professional edition of Talking Hoosier Baseball. We are recording this on Wednesday, September 24th, 2025. I'm Carl James, joined by Cassidy Palmer and Chris Feeney. We are also welcoming two very special guests in Pro Ball Hoosiers and David Welch.
Pro Ball Hoosiers is making his second appearance on Talking Hoosier Baseball, as he participated in our all-time draft with Jeremy Gray back in the early dark days of COVID in 2020. We're welcoming David to Talking Hoosier Baseball for the first time. That being said, we've sourced both of their X feeds for many years in bringing you information on Hoosiers in professional baseball. David Welch, his handle on X is at DCWelch_24. He lives in Marietta, Georgia, and provides us with a ton of edited video highlights from all levels of professional baseball from our Hoosier alums. He is also a prolific road tripper and jersey collector. David, it's awesome to have you on today.
Thanks, Cass, and thanks everyone else for having me. Baseball at IU is one of those almost forgotten about sports. When you got basketball and now football, but you know, it's always been one of those sports that you've always been drawn to just for the access that everybody gives you and you know, just how easy it is just to love baseball.
And at Pro Bowl Hoosiers is with us as well. He's back at home in Indiana. I've been talking about him forever on the pod. He always gives me some highlights, something to talk about, you know, on the weekly shows. He's been working on multiple sports for years. I always get a kick out of the overseas volleyball stats. You know, I don't know what it is. For him to actually, he even figures out like the flag of emojis to put next to this. I don't even know how he does it. Last time I saw him, we were near Signetti, I believe.
That's right. Walk,
which is a lot of fun, right?
Yep.
Great to have you back, man.
Hey, good to be here. I never miss an episode. It's a lot of fun to be on the episode with you guys. What a year we had with the pros and the majors and minors, and I can't wait to dive into it with you.
Yes, it has been a multiple record-breaking year for Hoosiers and the pros, but especially at the major league level. We have a lot of ground to cover here, so let's dive right in. 10 Hoosiers have played Major League Baseball in 2025. That is more than ever, and we're going to let our experts here discuss each one. David, why don't you start us off talking about McCade Brown?
Yeah, McCade is a story of just perseverance. I mean, he really hasn't had a healthy minor league season until this year. He came in pretty highly touted in the Rockies system. I think MLB Pipeline had him at number 26 back in 2022. He struggled a little bit with command, but you kind of wonder how much of that might have been due to injury. Coming into the pros. He's always had stuff, but everybody has stuff. That's why they're drafted. It's how well can you command that stuff? Throughout the process of each level. McCade started last year in Fresno, Low A, California League. Injury cut his season short, and this year he got bumped up to High A Spokane, and he really dominated the Bat League and out there in the West. Then he got a bump up to Hartford. It wasn't much of a surprise, but I think what really was a surprise is that the Rockies called him up, jumping him over AAA. He was, I wouldn't say dominant, but he had really good outings there in AA. So it looks like the Rockies front office said, no, let's skip putting him playing in the mountains and let's call him up here to the Rockies. And last night he goes out, throws five innings, two hits, and strikes out a new Hoosier record, 10, after Tanner Gordon had a couple of nines in there. So and at one point in the game last night, he struck out five in a row. He was kind of teetering. He kind of letting things get away from him, but he did a really good job at settling himself down and throwing strikes and getting a lot of swing and misses there.
Next up, Pro Ball's going to talk a bit about Jack Perkins.
So, Chris, you and I talked about Jack before the season started. We both thought he would start in the majors. The A's started him down in Nashville with AAA. Really did well down in AAA. You know, he's a Kokomo native, pitched for the Hoosiers in 22 as their ace, and came in as a, you know, after he was promoted to the majors in the bullpen. And he did well, really well. And then the A's decided to trade their closer at the deadline. And David and I were saying, oh, he's going to be the closer. He's going to move right into that role. But we were both wrong. He actually became the starter and won three games for the A's as the starter. Pretty low whip. Definitely see them using him in their rotation next year. Had a little bit of shoulder soreness late in the season, so he's no longer active. Hasn't pitched in a few weeks. But I think if he stays healthy, I think he'll definitely find a spot in that A's rotation next year.
David mentioned already a Colorado Rocky, McCade Brown. But they also have someone who's I consider a little special to iubase.com and to just this thing we do. He was the first player we ever interviewed. It was in the football practice field with the buzzing lights going on. I mean, we didn't know what we were doing. And he was so patient with us. He had come over from a JUCO. So I think his eyes were wide as it is to being at a D1 school and the workouts and how much different it was from JUCO. But he really gave us a lot of time. And we spoke to him. It's Tanner Gordon is the other absolute star of the Rockies now. They're doing really, really well, McCade Brown and Tanner Gordon. So David's going to talk a little about Tanner.
Yeah, I mean, Brown and Gordon have kind of become a 1-2 punch for in the Rockies rotation.
Oh, yeah.
Brown went last night. Gordon's going tonight here in about 30 minutes or so. What I've noticed about Gordon is that every time he gets a promotion, he kind of struggles out of the gate. But he always is figuring things out. I think every time when he was in the Braves organization, I'd go see him and he'd have a rough start. And then the next start, he'd figure some things out. He got promoted, struggled a bit, figured things out. And that sort of seems to what happened this year that last year he got the call and then started this year. I think he was injured at the beginning of the season, but then started in Albuquerque and then he got called up. And struggled a little bit as well, but he started putting things together. It seemed like after the All-Star break, this last few starts for him have been really good. I think two out of the last three. I think September's 12th start. He only had that one mistake to Manny Machado, hit a home run, but then he goes on and retires the next 16 batters in a row and had nine strikeouts, and then he does the same thing again. And I think, as Pro Ball said, that at that time, the only other Hoosier to have done that was Waddy Wilshire back in 1935. So, when you have to go that far back to be able to find when somebody was the last one to do something, what Gordon has done and then did it twice in back-to-back starts was really special.
All right. Well, now we're going to change things up a bit with a very nasty change-up, the one out of the hand of Craig Yoho. Pro Ball, what can you tell us about Craig?
So first, let me make a quick correction. I said that Jack Perkins had pitched in Nashville. That was actually Craig Yoho. Jack, of course, being with the A's, would be AAA in Las Vegas. I think you got a Las Vegas shirt, didn't you, David, from Perkins?
It's right over there. Yes.
Yeah, I bet it's a nice one. Craig was the one who started the year in Nashville, not Jack. And we all know Craig's change up. What a story Craig has been, playing shortstop in high school and then being a pitcher and just dominating on the mound at IU, having some arm trouble, coming back, learning an unbelievable change up, and getting the call to the major leagues this year for the first time. He absolutely dominated at Nashville, sub-1 ERA this year, really dominant with the strikeouts, using that curve change up as best he could. Got the call to Milwaukee and did serviceably well. I think we're going to see a lot of him in the future. Just a quick note. So Chris mentioned I moved to Indiana. I'd been on the East Coast. My family and I moved back to Fishers 4 years ago almost. And there had never been a major leaguer from either Fishers High School until Craig Yoho did it. And he went to Fishers High School, and somebody I'm going to talk about in a minute became the second one from Fishers to make it to the majors. So Craig's definitely got a spot in the pen for Milwaukee next year, and I really look forward to seeing him out there with that changeup, just unhittable.
Now, David's going to discuss the return to baseball for a guy who had a very promising start in the majors before running afoul of some betting rules. So David's going to talk a bit about Andrew Salfrank.
Yeah, I mean, when Salfrank made his debut, what was it, 3 years ago? He was kind of just thrown right into the fire. And you see him come in and, he's not giving up runs. And then the next thing you know, the D-backs are in the playoffs and he's still not giving up runs. And now they're in the World Series and Salfrank's still not giving up runs. I think in that whole run he made, maybe one run in that time. Here's Salfrank and he'd done so well in the minors coming up through the D-back system. And then, he has such a great season, and then he's off to a decent start the following year. And he's actually given up some runs, and I think June 1st or May 31st hits, and we're all kind of, we hear that there's some suspensions coming through from betting, and then, kind of the shock that Salfrank's name's on there. He took his medicine and came back the year later, and, he's picked up right where he left off. He's still dominating. He's it looks like the D-backs is sort of like eased him back into the role that he had prior to the suspension. He spent some time as the D-backs closer. I think in the past they've sort of done a closer by committee that they really haven't had a set closer. Salfrank has played that role. He's done the setup role. He's done these closed. I think he has three or four saves at this point so far. So it's just been great to see that, something that could have derailed other players, that Salfrank has come back and really hasn't skipped a beat.
Well, not only do we have many, many pitchers in the majors, we also have some bats. And just how David mentioned with Andrew Salfrank, he had to show that perseverance and that get back to bounce back from the betting scandal. Let's call it what it was, right? He humbled up. He did what he had to do. Took his medicine, like David said. Here's a different example of somebody whose perseverance was injuries. Matt Gorski, I can't imagine how this guy felt year after year, catching an injury, not getting called up. I don't know how many times we were looking at the Pittsburgh organizations thinking, what are you doing? Like, why aren't you calling up Matt? And I'd say it was the timing worked out pretty damn well, because I'm sure Pro Bowl is going to get into it. But his first at bat in the majors went pretty good.
It did, Chris. No, I don't want to bury the lead. That first at bat was a home run. It was amazing. Like you said, all the perseverance, all that hard work, all the rehab, and there he was in the major leagues. And that first at bat, he hit it over the fence. So it was a great welcome to the majors for Matt. That's the second part of my Fishers trivia. He's a Fishers native, and he went to Hamilton Southeastern High School, which is a rival of Fishers High School. And Yoho made it the week before him up to the majors, but they both made it to the majors representing Fishers. So, Matt, like you said, went through a lot. He finally made it. He spent a lot of time in AAA Indianapolis, just down the street from his house. And he had another home run other than that first leadoff home run. Didn't get a whole lot of at-bats in the majors. He got hurt again, and for some reason the Pirates decided to let him go to DFA him while he was on the injured list. He's since been signed by the Dodgers to a minor league deal, and look forward to him, making another comeback. If there's anybody we know that can do it, it's Matt Gorski. So, looking forward to seeing him next year.
Well, it's been a roller coaster ride for this veteran right-handed pitcher. David's going to talk about Scott Efros.
I think Efros might be one of our more elder statesmen on this list. He's battled injuries the last 2 years as well, coming back from Tommy John, and then dealing with some back issues as well. When he first got traded to the Yankees from the Cubs, him dropping down to that sidearm motion really gave hitters a lot of problems. And I think he even made a pitching ninja clip of No, he got somebody to swing and miss on a hit by pitch. That arm slot was creating so much movement on his ball. What Efros has done really well this year in the, I think, 11 appearances he had for the Yankees is he's got the ball in the ballpark. That's one of the big things as a reliever. Don't give up home runs, especially with runners on base. And he's only allowed one, and he's limited walks. He's only had 3 walks in those appearances as well. Part of what he struggled with is that batters are putting the bat on the ball and hitting .333 off him, which is which has led to his inflated ERA at the major league level. He spent probably most of his time at Scranton Wilkes-Barre with the Rail Riders, and he's kind of filled a stopgap role. He'll come in and pitch an inning sometimes when the game's out of hand. Other times, if just to be that bridge to the next guy out of the bullpen as well. It will be interesting to see what the Yankees do with him at the end of the season. I think he still has another year before his arbitration years are up. So we'll see if he gets non-tendered or if he gets released and able to sign with another team there.
Well, Timmy Herron has become quite a staple of the Guardians bullpen. Pro Ball has some more about Timmy.
So Timmy came up, 2 years ago in 2023 and really did a great job for that Guardians bullpen. Last year, he had a fantastic season. This year, he's regressed a little bit. Seems like the batters are squaring up just a little bit more on him. He played a handful of games in minor leagues this year, AAA, just to work on some things, but he's back up with the big club who looks to be playoff bound. He's got that funky arm slot from the left side, and as you guys know, there's always going to be a spot for him with his velocity on any major league bullpen roster. So looking forward to seeing him in the playoffs. I certainly expect for him to be on the playoff roster, and we'll see what happens with Tim in the playoffs.
It's pretty ironic. As Pro Bowl's talking about Timmy Herron, he just struck out Dylan Diggler in the 7th inning of the game, Indians-Tigers. Nice. Indians are up 3-1, top 7. So he gets put into a high-leverage situation. It shows you what they think about him.
I think he's got 14 holds this year. So he's definitely got the trust of his pitching coach and manager. They're putting him in high-leverage situations, and he's usually coming through for it.
Big time, big time. He's in that circle of trust. And the comeback the Indians made has been ridiculous. What were they down, 15 games?
Yeah.
And we might get some Timmy Herron action in the playoffs. Obviously going to be rooting for the Guardians. It's hard for me to even say that still, but
yeah.
I will be rooting for the Guardians. Our next pitcher, it was a little hard to root for him the last time I saw him pitch on TV. He came out of the Citi Field bullpen. The Mets were up about, I think, 6-2 or 6-1. It was the top of the order. He's got all top 6 guys to go through. He struck out 5 of them. He went 1-2-3, 1-2-3 through the Mets order. I don't know if I'm going to read exactly what it says on the script, but the Mets didn't look good. We'll just say that. Kyle Hart is obviously a veteran lefty. He's one of the first guys I've ever seen pitch at the BART. I could say that in 2014. I believe he got injured about halfway through. But that was my first season at the BART, so seeing Kyle pitch is one of my first guys. And he's just been another sign of perseverance. Like Hoosier alumni, that's like what it is. You know what I'm saying? And when Gorski hits the home run, I feel like he hit him for all the alumni and us. Like he hits it for the fans. And when Timmy Herron strikes out this guy, Diggler, I think he was a Big Ten player, actually, Dylan Diggler. It's like he's doing it for all of us. And that's what I really enjoy following the alumni through their ups and downs. And obviously once you get to the majors, you've already made it, but even through the minors and stuff, but David's going to update us on Kyle Hart.
Yeah. And I think, when looking at Hart's outing over the weekend, he came back Sunday and struck out 2 out of 3 as well. Okay. So he had the Mets numbers in that series. But Hart coming back from Korea, where he won their equivalent of the Cy Young Award, signing, I think it was a 2-year deal for the Padres. So, it showed that the Padres had more than just a passing interest on him. Or they could have just easily signed him for for that 1 year. And you know, that first series of the year, I think it was even against Cleveland, you know, he gets the start. And I think it was a game that was getting the Padres off to their best start in franchise history that he started. And he came out and he was throwing strikes, and he gave up some hard contact, but for the most part, he did what he needed to do. He kept the ball in the ballpark. He got swing misses, ground balls. Kyle Hart is just that wily, crafty, lefty veteran that all teams need to have somewhere. And it was great that he got this opportunity, because the first opportunity he got with the Red Sox, yes, it's great to make it to the majors, but when you do it during the COVID years and there's nothing in the stands except cardboard cutouts, I think that takes away a lot of the specialness of finally making it to the big league. So it's great to see that Kyle Hart got that opportunity to come back and get back to the majors and be able to pitch in front of people this time. And then we find out everything that he had been dealing with Lyme disease while he was pitching for the Red Sox as well. Kyle Hart's been one of those players for me that, he's always been special because he pitched in my hometown, the AA Sea Dogs, for so long, probably longer than he wanted to pitch there. But Kyle Hart, again, like you just said, Chris, is just one of those players that's grinded out, and then finally got that other opportunity. And who knows, maybe he'll end up opening up a Skyline Chili franchise out in San Diego.
Yeah, he really battled back. I mean, he was in Korea last year, of all places. Did really, really well in Korea last year, and so glad that the Padres gave him a shot this year.
It's the thing that it's 5 years in between too, right? Because that was 2020 that he was on the Red Sox.
Yes.
He didn't get called up for 5 years. And like David mentioned with the Cy Young over there, he wins their version of the Cy Young. I don't know. I've seen a lot of other guys, kind of say, okay, I'm going to go be the insurance salesman. But Kyle would not hang up those cleats. 5 years in between appearances. That's wild to me. And okay, yeah, he struck out a bunch of Mets. We were winning already. So, no, it was great to see him come out of that pen. He was always so nice. He was good to the people, the fans and the crowd. It was my first year over here. And, I mean, they all were. Schwarber and Sam Travis. And I feel like that's something that stayed, whether it was Skip or Limo and now Merz. The players get it. The players get it, and they give their time to the fans, and it's fun to follow them through their career.
Yeah, and I just might be jumping ahead a bit, but in meeting all of the Hoosiers that I've met, and I've lost count of what the number is at this point, but to a man, like, every single one of them has been awesome. They're all willing to give their time to talk, to have a conversation, talk about a clip that I posted, or I think Gabe Bierman one time asked me if I was Chris Feeney. It's like, no.
You told me that. I remember.
But I mean, they've all been like the best people that you could ever want to come across. Always willing to talk and get excited just that you're following their career.
And actually, I think our interview with Kyle Hart when he appeared on this show was one of my favorites that we've had in our history. So that's one long from our catalog. That's a good one though.
Good point, Carl. He was great for us. I mean, they've all been, but yeah. I think he let the guard down a little bit. He was just more personable. He told some more stories. And when they get more comfortable like that, I do appreciate them just kind of shooting the shit, just talking, not having to worry about the media side of it or anything like that.
All right. Well, that leaves one more to discuss. I don't think this is a suspenseful or all, because here we are. In 2025 with a Hoosier that is in the National League MVP discussion. And he's apparently making a case for himself tonight. So Pro Ball, what can we say about Kyle Schwarber?
Well, hot off the press, two more home runs tonight, up to 56 on the season. That ties him with Jack Clark for 111th place all time. He's already won an MVP this year. That was the All-Star MVP. And there certainly are rumors he might win the National League MVP, too. It might be tough. George McGinnis, the only other Hoosier that I could research to win a league MVP, and that was with the ABA a long time ago before he made his switch over to the NBA. So Kyle Schwarber would be in rare air to win an MVP award this year. Might be tough for him. Start with the negative, I guess. His batting average is below .250. But everything else just looks outstanding. 56 home runs, what, 32 RBI. Mm-hmm. He's got it going this year. He's really propelled that Phillies lineup. Not batting leadoff this year very much, maybe a handful of times. Batting in the two hole, still has tons of solo home runs. I don't have the number in front of me, but it seems like, you know, his two tonight, for example, were both solo shots. We thought when he dropped down to number two in the order that he might get some more RBIs, get some more runs in, but it doesn't matter. He's still out scoring. He has cut the strikeouts a lot this year, but that's something he's got to work on a little bit. But when you swing so hard as he does, I mean, I don't think the coaches matter that he strikes. He does walk a lot too. Unbelievable plate discipline and eye. He has a great eye in that batter's box. But certainly the most impactful player we talked about tonight without question. He was also named to the IU Athletics Hall of Fame this year, but deferred his induction because they're still playing. And a rule they have with the IU Hall of Fame is you got to be at the induction ceremony to be in inducted. But it is a big contract year for him. He's not signed with anybody yet for next year. And, you know, we'll see what happens. We'll see if he stays in Philly. There's rumors of other teams out there, but, you know, we'll see what happens. There is one more. I'm not going to jinx anything and say what it is, but there is one more record he could get this year that I'll announce, I guess, toward the end of the season if he gets it. But he's just been so great to watch and, you know, has taken over that lineup and propelled them to the playoffs as well.
2025 saw four Hoosiers drafted. Outfielder Devin Taylor, IU's career home run king, went to the A's in the second round. Outfielder Corbin Dickerson went to the Mariners in the fifth round. A pair of right-handed senior pitchers were also drafted, with Cole Gilley going in the 10th round to the Phillies and Ben Grable in the 11th round to the Yankees. What do we think about this draft class?
Well, I'll start off.
We've
got the thing is, when I was listening to a lot of the pundits talk ahead of it, I guess we were a little disappointed that Taylor did not go in the first round. And it's so interesting because you listen to a lot of the pundits, and some of them were going statistically, there was no question Taylor was the best hitter in this draft class in college baseball. When it came to his percentage of hard contact, which I think was 17 points above his closest competition, and his ability to not swing and miss on pitches outside the zone, was exceptional. So that's the point I wanted to make sure I had made about this group. So I guess the question comes back to he's just a corner outfielder, but Hoosiers without a major defensive position, I think it's we've proven that's kind of not a huge issue.
No, especially when their bat is that strong. And I will note that Devin's the only one of the four who has had consistent daily play once he was drafted.
Yeah.
And he was a daily player.
Yeah, I think the reckless abandon that Corbin Dickerson played for ended up costing him a little bit of his career. I mean, he played three games, had three hits, and then he had two highlight worthy catches as well. But I think he ended up getting injured on one of those ones that ended his season early. But he more than held his own in the opportunities he had.
I mean, he started to, I'd say Corbin, I mean, he wasn't used to playing as much as he was also. I mean, this was the most he played in a season in, I think, three seasons. We did see a drop off in his offensive production towards the end of the Hoosiers regular season. But, you know, I can't say I wouldn't have took it. You know, if you're going to go that high up, you go for it. That's the way I was looking at it from the get for Corbin. He caught magic in a bottle last year. All right, he did get injured his first minor league season. We'll see what happens going forward. I personally was shocked that Devin did get drafted earlier. I couldn't understand it. They were taking guys that we knew in the Big Ten. Like, the Mets took a Big Ten player from Michigan. Like, what are you doing? To think that we could have had Devin Taylor. And no, you know, bias aside, Devin actually lit up the numbers that people look at now, right? The going past the basic numbers. he was the star of the extra numbers. He was the star of the analytics. And you know what? A lot of teams messed up. That's my view on the draft, is that a lot of teams are going to regret that they don't have a Devin Taylor in their organization.
Yep. And Cole Gilley made one appearance minor leagues for the Phillies after he was drafted, pitched a couple innings and got a couple strikeouts, no hits, no runs, I think one walk. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Ben Grable didn't get into a game after he was drafted by the Yankees, but those guys will start their careers in full swing, you know, next spring. And, you know, there's a lot of promise for future professional athletes in baseball for the Hoosiers. That's for sure.
And we don't want to forget Will Eldridge as well, got signed as a free agent by the Braves.
Yep. Good call.
Now, there's plenty of pro Hoosiers that, you know, made their mark in 2025 in minor league and independent ball that are the coming soon Hoosiers, right? They might not have started. They wouldn't hit our list because they didn't play in the major leagues this season. But, you know, we got to look at our guys that are moving up. I believe we were talking about Fishers. Didn't Grant Richardson go to Fishers his senior year?
He did. Like he did. Yep. Yep. Yeah, he's another right? Fishers guy. Yep.
Yeah, he closed the title game on the mound at Victory Field. Now that I think about it, he played outfield and he pitched in relief for them.
But he I did the same like, in the Triple A this year. He played Triple A baseball and he also pitched one inning, or actually a third of an inning. So he still has that left-handed strength on the mound too, Chris.
Yeah, he's definitely somebody I would be looking for moving up, and he's one that I feel like I'm surprised hasn't moved up quicker in the ranks. Because I feel like he's one of the sweetest strings that has, you know, showed up at the bar. I said that about Taylor when he came. I go, this reminds me of Grant Richardson because it's just, you know, seamless. It seemed like it was so easy for these guys to hit these laser shots. But Grant's definitely somebody I'm looking at as far as in the minors. Who else would you guys want to pinpoint or take a look at?
I mean, I think we can't – I mean, any list would probably start with Philip Glasser, and the year that he had was absolutely amazing. No, Glasser's you're kind of your do-it-all player. No, if you need somebody to play second, he'll play second. You need to play third, he'll play third. Short. No, if he needs to play the outfield, he'll play the outfield. I mean, I'm sure if they need him to catch, he could even go out and do that. But, I mean, Glasser's hitting over 300 most of the year. He had a bit of a cool streak towards the end that dropped him below there. Now, I kind of look at his approach almost like Luis Arias of the Padres. When you watch Glasser play when you watch him at the plate, he's not trying to do too much of the ball. All he wants to do is put the bat on the ball and you know, the ball will find grass. And I mean, looking at the stats that he had in the Eastern League this year, he was an Eastern League All-Star. He was the Nationals organizational hitter of the year. He led the organization in base in hits at 125. He was third in hitting at 290. This is on the Eastern League, sorry. In the Eastern League, 293, seventh in runs. He had the fewest strikeouts of any player in the Eastern League, second lowest strikeout rate at 11%. I mean, Glasser just gets, he's just a ball player. He doesn't do too much. He's not going to hit tons of home runs. He's going to go out there, steal bases, get on base, and play solid defense, and then be a leader on top of everything else.
Exactly what he was for the Hoosiers.
So for my minor leaguer to highlight, I'm going to pick Nick Mitchell, Guardians outfielder. Really had a great season. Spent some time at three different levels and hit the ball well, stole a lot of bases and, you know, just a lot of doubles. And I think he topped out at, Dave, you might have to help me, was it Double A? This year for Nick Mitchell?
Yeah, he didn't make it to Double A, but he made it to High A, and they made it to the Midwestern League, the first round of the playoffs there, and lost in two games, two out of three.
But, yeah, so I think he's going to continue to progress through that Guardians minor league system. I think he's the one that I'm going to keep an eye on next year.
Yeah, and I think Mitchell as well, he was sort of the leader of that team by the end of the season. I think he's really the only player for Lake County that really had a good postseason run. But I think like looking at a lot of our other alumni, like Matt Lloyd, I think played a lot of the season with a hurt shoulder. He still hit 270, hit 9 home runs, 54 RBI. And he cut his strikeouts down by, I think, nearly 20%. I think as soon as he got on a roll, I think he was heading to the bench, and the Cardinals made a trade at the trade deadline that I think kind of hurt Matt a little bit, and bringing Blaze Jordan over from the Red Sox, kind of same position there as well. And I think one of the players with a lot of potential, but he got hurt early in the year, was Braden Reisdorf.
Yep.
I mean, he was really nearly unhittable at both levels until he got injured in South Bend. But I mean, he had a 0.35 ERA in 18 appearances. So, that was somebody I was really disappointed that didn't get to pitch more.
I know it's at a very small level, the independent, but the fact that Ty Bothwell managed to set a strikeout record at the independent league he was in, and just because he just keeps persevering and finding ways to still to do what he loves and still throw a baseball. That's I wanted to make a mention of that.
Yeah, I mean, and how much excitement he plays with as well is great. I mean, it can be easy, especially when you're playing in Northwest Montana. No, the grind of playing out there can get to you. But he plays with so much excitement and passion every game. And even with looking at other independent players, Braden Scott, he's set almost every strikeout record there is to set in Evansville. Single season career strikeouts, the Otters all-time strikeout leader. I think he's in line, if he's going to pitch another season, to where the league strikeout title could be in his reach as well if he has another year in him.
A couple other indie ball guys to mention. Alex Dickerson is still hitting home runs, playing independent ball in North Carolina. I think it's High Point, the High Point Rockers, I think it is.
Yep.
Still hitting the ball hard. Doubles or home runs usually every game for him. And one more, Caleb Berriger is playing in Taiwan right now. Spent a lot of time in Mexico, and now he's over in Taiwan. He had one outing only so far this year. I think they have a different schedule than we do. But it did really well on that one outing he had, and looking to make his way back to the majors where he played with the Giants years ago.
Really good to see Luke Sinard getting back out there, coming back from his Hoosier ending injury. That's another one I think over the next year or two could do some really impressive stuff.
Yeah, and I talked to Luke and Augusta before the game when I went and saw him there. Now, he's excited just to be on the mound again. He kind of went through not just the injury from the game at Kentucky. I don't think it was against Kentucky. It might have been. I don't remember. But then just the follow-up of having to go back in and move some things in there around again and having to rehab from that as well. Another Hoosier that's just persevered through injury.
Well, the 2026 Hoosiers are going to begin fall ball action in an exhibition against Ball State at Grand Park in Westfield on Friday, October 3rd at 6 p.m. There is admission charge for that one. That's not something we're used to with fall ball games, so that's going to be a $10 admission.
I'll be there.
Chris and I. So,
oh, yeah. Oh, good.
That's the Hoosier, for me.
Yeah. The Hoosiers will then break in the new turf at Bart Kaufman Field on Sunday, October 19th at 1 p.m., hosting Xavier. That one is free and open to the public. I will also have live game blogs for both of those. At iubase.com, should be up at the top. There'll be a link that you can get to the live game blog when that is happening. I really want to thank our guests today, David and Pro Ball. Thank you so much for not just coming on this podcast, but for all you do on X, for all you do to highlight these Hoosier alums and what they are doing in professional baseball.
I appreciate it. I mean, it started off as like looking at Pro Ball's stats and me saying, well, what does that mean? And then saying, hey, maybe other people want to see what the 2-for-3 looks like, or how long was that home run too. So, and then the more and more I've done it, the more and more I've seen how much the players love it and their families love it. So it's been great being able to know, they give us so much. It's just a small thing to be able to give back to them.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to this episode of Talking Hoosier Baseball. For more on Indiana University baseball, hit up iubase.com. For Pro Ball Hoosiers, David Welch, Cassidy Palmer, and Chris Feeney, I'm Carl James. See you at the BART.